name. I didn't know she submitted my name because I don't really submit my name anywhere. And I'm laughing because we went been to the full convention in Hawaii last year, and people were like, you have all that time clean. Why aren't you sending tapes? And I just don't believe in that. I'm from the old school. I think, you know, when God's in charge, it happens like it's supposed to. And then when they called me, I was like kind of shocked. You know, I'm like, well, I didn't submit my name. How did I end up getting to speak, you know? And then I asked, you know, the guy says, you're going to be speaking at the Women's Rep. And I'm like, how ironic that is, because women's recovery is, like, really important to me, very important to me. And I'm going to share with you my experience and my opinions, and that's all that is my opinions. My clean date is October 31st, 1981. And when I got clean, there was 3 meetings in our area. I was separated from my husband, and I went into rehab, and I met my second husband there. And I was still married to my first husband when I met him, and we got out, you know, we went to those 3 meetings. You know, it took us, like, hours to get there because my first husband was pissed and wouldn't give me either of my cars and the whole deal and all. And I went to the meetings, and it was mainly men. You know, there wasn't, like, a whole lot of women. If there was, you didn't see them more than once, you know. And this is where I think women's recovery is just, like, really different from men's, you know. My family really was very instrumental in getting me into rehab and pushing me to do recovery and get clean. And I had 2 small boys. They were 5 and 6 years old. And after a year of going to meetings, you know, like, my mother, who, like, really strong-armed me into going to the meetings getting clean, she kind of said, you know, you have 2 little boys here to take care of, and you're always at a meeting, which, like, was kind of ironic, because when I was using, I was known to disappear for days. So to go to a meeting, you know, even if it took me 2 hours to get there, you know, to say to my kids when I put them in bed at night, I'll see you in the morning, and to be there in the morning was really different for them, you know, because I'd say, well, I'll be here in the morning, but I never said what morning, you know. So, like, after a year of doing the meetings, my mom kind of pulled me aside and said, you know, you got these 2 boys, and you need to, like, stop the meetings, and, like, you're you know, basically cured now, and take care of these boys. And, like, people were really on my back about that. And, like I said, there wasn't a lot of women that were in the meetings to talk to, and men didn't really seem to have this problem. So I'm like, okay, you know, you're pretty right. So I quit going to meetings for about 5 years. And it's kind of ironic, because my son ended up in a rehab at 15, and it was really a crisis, and he decided to go live with his father that he was using with. And his therapist at the rehab where he was at didn't, when he did his intake and all, his first week he was there, and he you know, didn't talk to the family, they asked him if, you know, he had any addiction in his family, and he was like, no. And I already had 6 years clean. So it was kind of ironic. They had sent me to, like, different fellowships, you know, to, like, learn how to cope with him. And I was real lucky that his therapist was in the NA program. And he kind of pulled me aside, and he said, you know, where do you need to be? Because, see, you're getting nowhere with him, and you're not gonna do him. But where do you need to be? Because you better learn to deal with this. And I came back here. And I'm real glad that I did, because during those 5 years, nothing in my life changed except for I didn't use. And I couldn't understand why my life was still chaotic. There was still police being called. You know, there were still fist fights. I was still threatening to kill my ex-husband and everything. I didn't understand that, like, the main part of this disease is changing your behaviors. You know, I thought it was just, don't pick up the chemical, and, like, life will be great. And I just couldn't understand why it wasn't working out that way. You know, and I feel bad for my second husband, because, you know, during that time I didn't change. And I always say, he paid for every sin that my first husband did. You know, everything. I remember, you know, the first couple years we were married, and telling him, we was arguing over something really stupid, and he was trying to argue, and I just didn't want to hear it, because my first marriage was so abusive, and I didn't want to get to that point where my second marriage got like that. And I remember telling him, I says, you know what? I don't know if anybody listens to country, but there's a song out now, George Strait, Give It Away. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was when I got clean, you know. Me and my first husband used, it was abusive, and it was like by the time I got in, you know, before I got into the rooms even. Whenever it was like the end, I was like, here's the house, here's the cars, here's the dogs, I got my kids. You know, do what you want to do. I'm not living with you anymore. I'm not living like this. And my second husband, we was arguing, and I said to him, you know, I walked on in a house, cars, animals. I don't own anything with you. You're going to be real easy to get rid of. you know. And I look back at that now and I shudder that I would say that to somebody I cared about, you know, but he did. And I don't know why he hung around. We're still married today, which is like, it's an irony in itself, you know. And I have to laugh because people will say, well, you spent in rehab. How did that work? And I always say, we worked our marriage like the program, just for today. And I'm sure he felt the same way. As a matter of fact, I'm sure he still to this day feels the same way. As I say, if I'd have thought 25 years ago that I'd still be with him today, I'd have took the bridge because we, that was not a pretty sight, you know, the two of us trying to get better and just, you know, and I had like major, major control issues. But I always laugh when I hear people today and they say, you know, especially the women, they'll say, well, I don't trust women. That's why I don't want to be at the women's, you know, women's meetings, or I don't want to get close. And I'm like, and I thought about that. I thought, you know what? I didn't trust anybody when I got here. I didn't trust men. I didn't trust women. I didn't trust myself, which was like the bottom line. I just didn't trust myself. I knew what I was like. And I knew that, you know, if you were here, you were like me, you know. But, you know, like I said, whenever I come back in with 5 years clean, you know, I really, really put my heart and soul into it. And it was because I could watch him, you know, watch my son slipping. And his biggest gripe was like, I can't go to meetings because you're there. And it was like, you know, hun, like, there was 3 meetings when I got clean. There's 400 and some now. I don't cross the bridge. I don't know what this area is like. The Pittsburgh area is kind of like funny because if you live on this side of the bridge, you really don't go to the other side of the bridge. You know, I travel more now that I'm clean than I did when I was using. There was just no need. You know, I was in West Mifflin area. There was Kennywood, First Mall, Century 3 was there. I had no reason to go on the other side of town. But I told him, I said, you can go, you know, go and do whatever. And then the funny thing was, is like he went into rehab and went to live with his father. My father-in-law, who was a heroin addict for like, he was, from Judge Manning's statement, he was the oldest living heroin addict he ever knew. You know, he moved in with me. I had my youngest son that was just kind of floating out there because he got lost in the shuffle of all this, you know. And, you know, that's when I started to, like, talk to women and find out how much I need women in my life, you know, because they knew what I was talking about. You know, I kind of watched today. I was pretty fortunate that I didn't have to take my children to meetings. You know, but I watch that now. I watch women come in and they bring their children and, like, you know, somebody in the meeting is going to have an issue with it. You know, oh, your kids are here. And I always say, you know, when I came in, I didn't really have good parenting skills. You know, and I don't today think it's about the kids. I think it's about not having the skills. And it's not about complaining about the kids. It's about approaching the mother and letting her know. You know, you really shouldn't let your kid be, like, in that room over there writing with crayons on the wall. You know, it's about how you approach it. And sometimes even as women, we can be mean, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get recovery, and your kid's over there talking. You know, we shouldn't be doing that to each other. It's funny because I was just talking to one woman here about starting a women's meeting, and my home group actually offers a women's meeting three weeks out of the month. And it started out with, like, 4 of us. And there's approximately 40 to 50 women that come every week. So it's really grown, you know. And about 3 years ago, I started a women's meeting, and it didn't take off like I wanted it to, but I really benefited from it. And it's kind of funny because when the meeting closed, a lot of the women were like, oh, you know, you closed that meeting. I don't have nowhere to go. And I'm like, well, where were you when I was sitting up here on 10 below zero by myself, you know. But I laugh because a lot of the men wanted to come to the meeting because as soon as you say women's meeting, they all say, oh, the male bashing meeting. And I'm like, I don't have time for that, you know. I just don't have time for that. That's what my friends and my support group and that's for, you know. But, you know, we had a few men to come, and we've never denied them to come in. We'll let them know, you know, here, this is a women's meeting. You're welcome to stay, but, you know, would appreciate if next week you would find another meeting to go to. And when they've come, they've always been like, wow, it's nothing like I thought it would be, and I really got a lot of recovery here. You know, I really learned things that I needed to know. I just think for me, like, you know, sometimes at the meeting, like I said, you know, back then there wasn't a lot of meetings, to talk about some of my issues and some of my abuse issues and sexual abuse issues and you know, promiscuity, you know, and I watch that kind of day, a woman will share about that. And like every, you know, like maybe out of a group of 50 men, 20 of the men will be focused because they can't wait for it to get done and go right over. You know what I mean? They prey on it. You know, and that's not to say, you know, I can't say, I watch women do that to men, too, so it's not even about that, but it's just like sometimes it's not good to put that kind of stuff out there, you know? And I'm, like, pretty, when I sponsor a woman, I'm pretty, like, don't share everything in a meeting. You know, I hear people say, I go to a meeting and I share everything. I don't do that. You know, I just, until I'm okay with it, I can't give it to everybody. You know, I might have, you know, 24 years clean, but there's still some people I know for a fact are not here to get well. You know, some of them, you know, they're just here because they have to be. So I just think, you know, women in your life is really, really important. You know, my support group is mainly women. There's about 25 of us. We're a sponsorship family. We do a lot of things together. Like, we'll do this, but we have our own retreats where we go. And we get slammed a lot sometimes because people are like, oh, yins are exclusive or whatever. And it's really not that way. You know what I mean? If we go to a place, we go to this one place, and they have 25 beds open is all they have. So, you know, we invite, you know, the ones that our family, and then we always ask somebody else. Everybody has opportunity to ask somebody else, you know. So we've kind of grown over the years, and it's funny because, you know, being with a group of women, you have your little issues, and you kind of go back and forth, and you might have your little arguments and your little fights, and you might, you know, be pissed and slammed. But we have, you know, we have like this little contract within us that, like, when we're upset with one and you're sharing it with somebody else, it doesn't get carried anywhere else, and we don't take our business outside of our own little group. You know, and it's worked very well for us. You know, that's not to say that we all, you know, we all get along all the time. You know, we all love each other, but sometimes we don't really like each other, which I think is pretty normal. You know, I'll hear people say that in the rooms. Well, I love all of yous, and they just, like, don't say the whole thing. I don't like all of yous all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, and I remember saying that to my son, my oldest son. You know, he's in Rocky Prison right now, and he was with me here 2 years ago, and he just couldn't get this after 16 years. And I'm real grateful for where he is. But I remember looking at him, something he was doing, and I'm like, you know, I don't really like you. And he's like, you're my mother. You got to like me. No, I'm your mother. I love you. But I'm not really liking you, you know, at this moment. That was another hard thing for me, you know. Even though I got married again, I raised him as a single mother. You know, my second husband, we didn't agree on, like, a lot of disciplines. He never had kids, and we kind of disagreed on everything. I'm kind of lax. I was working two jobs to support them because my first husband, his favorite thing was always, I make the money, you'll do it my way. And I'm like, I ain't ever going to have a man tell me that again. So I worked two jobs, and he spent more time with them. And like, I'm the type, like, they had their own room. I don't care what you do in your room, you know, as far as, like, throw your clothes on the floor. I don't really have an issue with that. Keep the door shut. If it's not smelling, I'm okay with it. And my husband would open the door, and then he'd bitch at me. The boys' room's a mess. You need to go in, you know. But I was never sure. Like, when I disciplined them, I knew why I was disciplining them. I was never quite sure why he was disciplining them, you know. And, I mean, he told me straight up that he was glad we couldn't have kids because he didn't want anything to compete with. So that kind of put a little, you know, I knew having boys was kind of an issue with him. But that was hard raising them on my own, you know. I really didn't know. Like I said, my parenting skills weren't that great when I come in. You know, I met women in the room to kind of, you know, help me along with that. And, you know, I took, when he got arrested, you know, 2 years ago, I really took a beating for that because you still, no matter how hard you work on something, you still take it as your responsibility. You know, I didn't raise him that way. You know, didn't I teach him better? Didn't I show him? And he actually got arrested on my 50th birthday. And I was like, he called from the prison. Or from the Allegheny County Jail, and he's like, Mom, and I seen a couple of my caller ID, and I'm thinking, okay, he got in a fight with somebody, no big deal. And I answered the phone, and he said, I'm in jail. I said, yeah, I've seen that. What are you in for? He said, armed robbery. And I said, oh, is this happy birthday to me? And like, he started crying because he hadn't even realized it was my birthday. I really didn't want to talk to anybody because of this shame and guilt and embarrassment. So I didn't call anybody all day, and my girl started calling. Happy birthday. Well, I wasn't really feeling happy birthday, and I was really looking forward to turning 50. Because if you live our life and you hit 30, you are so lucky. And to hit 50 was like, I was telling everybody. I was telling people at work, people I didn't know, I'm going to be 50 on Sunday. I'm going to be 50. They thought I was all nuts. But everybody here got it, you know. But, you know, I got off the phone, and I was devastated, and the girls started calling, and I'm like, you know, I'm not trying to tell them because I really hadn't processed myself, and they could hear it in my voice, and I'm like, you know, Shane got arrested. You know, he's in a county jail, and it's armed robbery. It's bad. He's gone for a while. And they're like, great. And I'm like, wow. You know, what? And they said, don't you remember for 16 years you've been praying for God to stop him anyway, just keep him alive. You got your prayer, so what's your problem now? You know, and I thank God that I had those women in my life, because I don't know what would have, you know, I don't know how I would have dealt with it. You know, I truly don't know. And they kind of carried me through that process. And it's funny because how God really works. He was facing probably about 60 or 70 years, you know, so the judge says, which, you know, that's a scary thing. But he was facing 15 years. And he got 2.5 to 5 years. So, you know, I mean, God really works whenever you work. And he had a year clean June 1st, which is amazing. But I'm hoping he gets it, because my foundation, my basis is these rooms. You know, I don't know how people deal with life that don't have a program. You know, I truly don't know, because I've been through some rough things in recovery. It's not all roses and sunshine. It's just not that way. You know, when my mother passed away, you know, she passed away of cancer. They diagnosed her on a Tuesday, and she passed away on a Friday. And I remember, you know, and some of the old things, like one of the things that I was told was, you know, to tell on yourself, you know. So I remember being in the hospital in the ICU unit, and she had a morphine drip in her arm. And I was the only one there at that time, and I'm looking at that drip, and I'm thinking, you know, and I, you know, 16, 17 years clean, and I'm looking at that drip, and I'm thinking, I wanted to be numb. I just wanted to be numb. And I'm thinking, I'll bet you I could take that out and put it in my arm, you know. And a nurse walked in, and I said to the nurse, I want that morphine drip. I'm going to take it out and put it in my arm. She looked at me like, I know she like wanted to just send me right out of the hospital, you know, because she just didn't get that. But the funny thing was, is like, you know, she said, well, you need to go out and wait, because I'm going to change this or whatever. And I walked out, and as I walked out, my husband was in the waiting area, and he had the phone in his hand, and he said, friends of ours from Panama City, Florida, that are in recovery, he said, Tish called, she wants to talk to you, you know. And like, people showed up at the ICU, and like, it's unbelievable, you know. If you give your heart to this program, and you give the best of yourself to it, what you get back, you know. And like I said, people carried me through that stuff. You know, my mother passed away, my grandmother passed away, who I lived with, my son's in jail. And, you know, I was talking to my boss the other day, because she has some issues going on, and we started talking about that. And they know, I don't care who knows, you know, I don't care who knows I'm in recovery. I really didn't care who knew I was using, so it really isn't a big issue for me to know that, you know, I'm in recovery. But we was talking, and she, you know, it kind of like all happened in like a 5-year span, and I was talking about the program to her, and she says, wow, she said, I was really thinking, because sometimes I was bad, like I come into work like the day after my son cried, and I started 5 o'clock in the morning, and I walked in, and she said, good morning, and I just broke into tears, and I'm not a crier, you know, I'm not really much of a crier, and she said, I watched you for those couple, you know, like off and on over the months, and she said, and I'd see you just walk in, and you would just look like you just couldn't take anymore, and she said, and I wondered how you got by that, and I know that you know, well, they think it was drinking, you know, although I've shared it's drugs, but drinking's more acceptable, you know, not, I mean, I, drugs a drug a drug. And she says, I wondered how you got through that and you didn't start drinking again. And I said, because I have a program and I have a fellowship and I have people that carry me through that and help me through it. And, you know, I have some good men in my life. I truly do. But for me, it's the women in my life, you know, that mean everything. And it's kind of ironic, because like I said, when I first came in, didn't have any use for women, didn't have any use for men. But mainly, I really didn't have any use for women. You know, I truly didn't. I knew I could manipulate a man. I wasn't manipulating any women. You know, they just... I was talking to a girl not too long ago who's been trying to get clean, and she got thrown out of a rehab, and she's all, you know, like... And she's this cute little thing. I was 26 when I got clean. I was kind of cute myself, you know, and I get it. And she's like, well, they won't let me. And I'm like, you need to take your ass up there and tell them. You know, tell me what I need to do. And if they say, we want you in here now, take the bed and call your mother, call somebody to come bring you your stuff. Because, see, you've run your course of no matter how cute you are, you're dealing with women therapists now, and they know. And most of the therapists in the treatment centers are in recovery. So, you know, like, the game's over. You know, give it up. And she can't seem to do it. But I said, that's what it is for me. It's like, the game's over. I got a support group that doesn't buy my bullshit, you know, calls me on my stuff, doesn't have a fear. I've learned how to do relationships. I've learned how not to get pissed off and never talk to you again, because that was a good one for me. If you pissed me off, you were non-existent. I could walk by you on the street and people would know we never knew each other, you know. And that's not to say it doesn't happen. I have a sister that's like that today. You know, I just don't talk to her. I don't bother with her. You know, if I see her, I act like, you know, I mean, I don't even see her. We'll be in the same room. I truly don't even see her anymore. But I don't, you know, that's like a different story that, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that goes on there, and every time I give her the opening, it just gets worse. And but the people in my life, you know, my sponsee family and my support group and all, like, it's not like that. You know, they're part of who I am and what I am, you know, and I don't need to change that. And my time's pretty much up. And one of the things I always close with, and this is what I truly believe, is I may not be who I want to be, but I thank God I'm not who I used to be.
Thanks, Jean. Okay, I'd like to introduce the second speaker. Her name is Becky from the NA Way group of NA in the Laurel Mountain Highlands area.
Hi, everybody. I am so nervous, so please bear with me, because like I said, I've never really spoken in front of a group before, and this is going to be slightly difficult for me. But my clean date is May 1st of 2005. I only have a little over a year, so you know, for me, a lot of things are still new, and I'm still growing in this program. And you know, it's funny, though, when you sit and you listen to somebody else and how much you have in common with them, you know, as far as some of the things go, because I have a mother who is not in any way, shape, or form ever touched anything of a substance other than cigarettes. And when she was done with them, she just dropped them like it was nothing. So for her to understand me in this program was really difficult, too. You know, so I kind of got the same thing after my first year. You've got three kids, and you need to wake up and start taking care of them. I can't keep taking care of them. And you know, it was a lot of the same things. I disappeared a lot. I'd take off for, you know, for a while, and she was left to take care of my children for me. So, you know, a lot of it was association. Even my children associated that with mom's out using, or mom's not going to be coming home tonight, and we're stuck with grandma yet again. Now, I think, yeah, I agree with Jean when it comes to the parenting skills. I had absolutely none, and I had no way, you know, of trying to understand my children, or even the hell that I put them through, you know, throughout the years of my using, because I pretty much didn't stop until my youngest one was four, you know. And it was really difficult to kind of walk into parenthood when I have an almost teenager, you know, an almost 10-year-old, and they said a 4-year-old, that I kind of had to, you know, grow up with them all over again. And it was difficult. It really was, especially my oldest one, because he kind of had a lot of resentments. You know, I ended up losing him to his father, and I know that it was really difficult for him to go through all the years of being home and taking care of his brothers, because mom couldn't get up in the morning to do that, you know, to turn around to go and live independently at his father's house and worry about his brothers at home. Is mom going to be okay? Are my brothers going to be okay? You know, and it's really, really disturbing to me now to realize what I put, you know, especially my oldest one through. Yeah, because in the mornings he'd get up, he'd make sure his brother was ready for school, he'd make sure the baby had their, you know, his bottle and all that, and change his diaper. And you know, I put a lot of responsibility on that child's head, and I didn't even take into consideration what I was doing to him and not being the mother that I should have been. You know, I'm building relationship back with them now. You know, it's really difficult, and there's still times where they struggle along with, you know, mom going back to work. And when I attempted that before, mom worked from 10 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock in the evening, and my 10-year-old started to throw an absolute fit because he associated it again. Mom's gone, you know, and now she's got the boyfriend living at the house, which, you know, I've been with him for a little over a year now, and I met him in the program, and he's been an absolutely wonderful, wonderful person. But you know, they're thinking, well, okay, now we're not staying with grandma now. We're going to be living with this boyfriend. And, you know, I had to end up quitting the job because my child was starting to have, you know, real issues with the whole situation of mom being gone a lot. So, you know, I got him counseling now. And I have a counselor who comes to the house like 5 days a week. So she's teaching me how to be a mother to my kids, and teaching them that mom is trying her absolute best, you know, to get them the help that they need to, you know, start being children and not adults. Because I still catch them, even my 10-year-old, saying, no, you can't do this, or, you know, kind of taking the authority in the house. And I keep going, no, Brandon, I'm the mom. And he just kind of looks at me like, well, yeah, maybe now you are, but before you weren't. So, you know, it's really hard being, you know, a parent after neglecting that issue for so many years. And I really feel bad for my children. You know, going back towards a little ways before my whole addiction thing started, I was a basic teenager. I dropped out of school, you know, got pregnant at 16 and had my son at 17. So, you know, that made it difficult as it was. And my mother, who was the enabler, kind of took over the parenting role for me. So she made it even easier for me to go out and use whenever I wanted to. You know, thinking, oh, you know, it's okay. She's just, you know, going through the teenage phases. You know, she had a child too young. And, you know, I guess if she would have cracked down a little bit more, maybe I wouldn't. But I can't blame her for it because, you know, that was my own choice to do. You know, I know for years, though, I did blame my mother for it. I blamed my father because he was a raging alcoholic and abusive to my mother and me whenever he was living in the household, kind of up and left, chose the alcohol over us. And I swore to my, you know, all my life that I was never going to turn out like this man. And even though I pretty much grew up without him, and I met him when I was like 23, I found out that I was just like this asshole, and pardon the expression, but I was, you know. It was sick. It really was to find out I was a lot like him. When I was 25, shortly after my third son was born, I had been out and about partying with a friend of mine. We were following other friends. We were going from one bar to another bar doing our thing. And due to weather conditions and my condition, I ended up wrecking my car and killing my best friend and severely injuring myself. So I put a real big damper on my life. You know, my self-worth and my whole ego kind of dropped real fast. You know, Mom went to jail over this whole situation, which again put another issue on my children's where they had to, you know, not only did they not have their mom, but now they got to face their mom through glass, you know. And I was going through a lot of self-hatred. You know, how could God do this to me? Why would he do this to me? Why would he take somebody like my best friend, you know, as young as she was? And again, you know, being in this program and all that, I learned that it wasn't God, you know, because it was his kind of way of saying to me, you need to slow down. And unfortunately, consequences have no certain name on them, you know. He will throw at you even some of the worst things just to try and wake your ass up. And unfortunate for me, I didn't wake up after that, you know. After I went to jail for what I got lucky for only several months, you know, got out, and I started back on my run again. You know, I figured, you know, life wasn't worth it. I didn't want to live. I couldn't stand it. I didn't want to have to live with the guilt and the shame anymore. I kind of lost all emotions the day that I woke up in the hospital and they told me that my best friend had died in that accident, because I had no idea. You know, I had been knocked unconscious for a full day before I even knew anything about it. I did. I went on many suicide attempts, you know, taking family or friends or anybody else into consideration. You know, I was on a self-destruct mode, and I stayed on that for several years. But yet again, you know, God kind of intervened and sent a parole officer in while I was at a bar one night, and I ended up back in jail again. And that brought me to this program. You know, I got sentenced 90 and 90. And, you know, while I sat in jail for the second time, I had kind of like one of those ordeals where, you know, things in my life have got to change. Obviously, somewhere along the line, I couldn't kill myself no matter how hard I tried. I used so much that I'd just pass out. You know, no matter what attempts I made, I still woke up the next morning regretting what I had done the night before. So somewhere along the line, things had to change with me. You know, I knew that I had a purpose, so I guess I had to seek it. You know, and I took into consideration and did my 90 and 90, and I started meeting people in the programs. And I started to relate to stories, you know, and that I wasn't the only one that had lived a hard life. You know, I didn't, you know, wasn't the only female who came from abusive relationships, who had a boyfriend who had beaten her and, you know, sexually abused her, or a father who had, you know, neglected and abused her as, you know, a child too. I found that there were other women out there that had that same issue that I had. And you know what? They were living their life. They were making it through. So why couldn't I? You know, And I started to see a small glimmer in my child's eye, too, whenever I was there in the morning, whenever they woke up, you know, and I started to get them off and to school, being able to be there for them. And, you know, they started to lighten up a little bit, and I'm thinking, you know what, this isn't so bad after all. You know, maybe I can do this. And, you know, I did have a lot of doubts off and on, you know, and there's been a lot of cravings here and there over, you know, certain issues that I've had. But all in all, you know, I give a lot of grace to the program. I really do. Because if it weren't for a lot of people kind of tucking me under their wing and taking me in, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. You know, I didn't trust women either. You know, I really, yeah, I can't say so much about men because I always related with men more than I did with women. All my friends on the outside were all guys because any woman I ever came across stabbed me in the back and, you know, did anything in her power to do whatever she could to be, you know, evil. And I didn't quite understand that, so I pretty much assumed because these women in the rooms were addicts too, they were going to be the same way. And it ended up that's not exactly the way it was. Now you're going to come across your few here and there that aren't well enough yet that might do that. But for the most part, you can trust most of the women in the room. You know, they're there for you to cry on their shoulder, and it's really good to be able to, like, lend a shoulder and a helping hand to somebody when they really need it because, you know, it just kind of gives me, for me personally, you know, that self-worth that I am capable of reaching out my hand and helping somebody else through what I couldn't help myself through there for a while. You know, somebody else lended their hand out to me and gave me that small push and the guidance that I needed. And, you know, I'm more than willing to do the same for any woman who lends, you know, reaches out and says, I need help. I can't do this by myself. And I know how hard that is in itself is just to ask for help. I couldn't do it. You know, my sponsor used to get on my shit all the time because I wouldn't call her when I was having tragedies or having moments. I'd be like, no, I can do this. I don't need you. She's like, yes, you do. All you have to do is ask, and you know, I'll give you my opinion. I won't do it for you. I'll give you my opinion and help you through it. But, you know, for the most part, you're going to be doing it yourself. Just, you know, be willing to lean on other people. And I know for myself, that's been my hardest, is to lean on others, you know, for the help. You know, I really don't know. I just know that this program has given me a life, you know, and it's given my children a new start in life, too. And I'm one of those moms that takes the kids to the meetings, but I also pack a backpack full of stuff when I do take them so that they have things to do so they're not up jumping around and yelling. You know, I do take that extra step to make sure that they're slightly entertained with crayons or books or even Game Boys. I hate those things, but they're, you know, miracles when it comes to the meetings because a child, especially with the boys that, you know, that we have, you know, I kind of got into the relationship when I did. I kind of inherited two more boys, so we're kind of raising five boys in a house, you know, for one who couldn't handle the three that she's got, now trying to take care of five of them. You know, I'm feeling a little outnumbered, you know, by far. You know, and another guy from a program also moved into our house, so I know that I haven't made it to too many meetings lately because of children being out of school, and I can't wait till school gets back. But when I don't get it, I've got my boyfriend who's in recovery, and I've got his friend who is temporary staying with us who's also in the program, so I have that in the house, you know, if I need to. I can sit down and talk to either one of them. You know, relationships, you know, now, I had a hard time, like Gene did, with starting a relationship because I kind of used my past relationships. He's going to be this way. He's going to be that way. And I put up that wall. I put up that defense. And I automatically assumed what he was going to be like or what he was going to do before he did it, you know. And that's actually wasn't the way it was at all. We kind of live on that just for today as well in our house. And we even sat and wrote our own just for today poem that we have hanging up on the wall now that, you know, just for today, we're not going to scream and yell at each other, that we're going to sit down and we're going to talk out our issues and not go to bed mad, you know. And certain things that kind of go in along with the program as well as in our home, we just try to practice the principles in all our affairs, and we seem to do really well. You know, for a little over a year, he's the first man that I have not had a screaming and yelling battle with yet. You know, and for me, that's pretty damn good for being with someone that long and not having any controversy like that. We've actually sat down and talked out every issue that we've had and not gone to bed mad with each other. And I think it's great, and I don't think I could have done it without the program and people in it. I really don't know what more to say. I just know that life's been good to me so far, and I plan on keep coming back. Thanks.